welcome to an action-packed episode of ARG Presents. I'm your good chum, amigo Aaron, joined by a man so foul that he ended our brothership at just two. We never even made it to a trilogy. I give you the Brent.
You know, speaking of trilogies, remember back in the day when Capcom couldn't count to three?
Yeah.
Street Fighter, Street Fighter 2, Street Fighter Champion, Street Fighter Turbo, Freestyle Hyper, blah, 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 blah. Valve has picked up that mantle with Half-Life and is going for the new high score. Some trilogies, man, they just never get made.
Yep, and that's where the Dowdy brothers were, man. So, along those lines, if you tuned in last week, we spun the wheel, we made the deal, Brent. And this week, we'll be playing games that were the last of a trilogy.
Yes.
The last of a trilogy. You know, when this came up on the wheel, I thought to myself, man, that's really clever. That'll be a lot of fun to pick out. And then I sat there and furrowed my brow in a vain attempt to understand. This was a much harder thing to find than I thought it would be, man. Did you have the trouble I did?
I did. I went and I said, okay, something that had, you know, three games, and then nothing. That's what I wanted. Three games and then nothing. That is very, very hard to find.
Indeed. And very difficult.
Because a lot of those games, you know, if you can get three games out the door, chances are, even if the third game was a complete bomb, chances are you're going to get some kind of revitalization down the line when those retro good feels hit you.
So it was
surprisingly difficult. Now, the first thing that popped into my mind, and I don't know if you would have went for this or not, was Super Mario Brothers 3. Because it was the last of its line.
That made a lot of lists, one. But I mean, that one's hard to pick, isn't it? I mean, honestly. Because I mean there have been many, many Super Marios over the years.
And also, I mean,
and that's the problem. This I knew right away that we were probably gonna have to do Last of a Trilogy with the butt strapped to the end because even the game I chose, you could argue that they had more than, I mean, it definitely absolutely had more than one title released well after the fact.
Yeah.
But it's difficult to find some that just flat out died. You're right. And the funny thing is, a lot of games that you think stink, they still somehow lumbered past the third game.
Yep.
You know, and so if this was the last of two, it probably would have been easier than the last of three.
Way easier, yeah.
And then, you know, also know the video game world holds on to their titles, their merchandise, like Grim Death, and they want to squeeze and wring out every conceivable drop of what they could do with something. And so, I mean, when I looked at I did some searches for trilogies, and so I was getting stuff like, I was like, Postal, for example, kept coming up. I'm like, Postal had three games? How in God's name did that happen? You know, but you remember at the time it had the big name because it was so stupid, you know. But it was quite remarkable and difficult to find trilogies. Now, I will say, I want to use some of this time for my honorable mention because I told Brent right away that I had one that I wanted to do. And the only reason I didn't do that one in place of the one I picked was because I couldn't get myself and Brent a copy in time since we're running on a short week this week.
Right.
And that game was Def Jam Icons. Now, the Def Jam series started with Def Jam Vendetta, then Def Jam Fight for New York, and ended abruptly with Def Jam Icons. And this is the perfect example of a game that ended. This is what I was looking for. It's a game that came out, they've monkeyed with the original games and ruined it. They ultimately ruined the series to the point where the fans no longer would accept it as a game.
Yeah.
And it's funny to go back and watch videos and read stuff of what happened, because if you're familiar with the, and by the way, here's me talking about the Def Jam games, but by God, they were good games.
The first two were pretty good. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. There's a wrestling tie-in because Aki was making a wrestling game for WCW, and WCW, the wrestling promotion, got bought by WWF at the time, WWE. And so there was no room for another wrestling game. And so they shopped their engine around, and EA used that wrestling engine with the hip-hop license for Def Jam to come up with a really neat game. It was a fighting game. It was sort of like I guess the best way to describe it would be fighting in the round, sort of, where the crowd would get involved. Sort of like Pit Fighter, except 50 million times more awesome. And what they did was they took actual stars that Def Jam had. They actually had actual actors. Like in the second one, you had Machete was in there. You also had like a bunch of non-singers in there. You also had girlfriends that were a big part of it. The girlfriends could fight. The storyline was really fun. It was just a great game. And it was fun. It was a cool fighting game. It was way over the top. Over the top. Well, in the third game, EA decided instead of using the Aki engine, they were going to use the engine from Fight Night in the game. They went to a whole other house to do it. It was EA Chicago did this one. And they implemented that system of Fight Night. And Fight Night was a great system at the time. It had won awards for that because that's a great boxing game. But it's totally different than what the first two games were, and not in a good way.
Yeah, and so it was such a departure.
It also dropped, like, it was like 40% of the characters were gone. So you had, I mean, the second Def Jam game had like, I think it's like 46 selectable characters. It was unbelievable. And then they dropped like 20 of them or something like that for the third one. They added a bunch of, it's the ultimate suggestion of what they were trying to innovate, but they gave the people what they did not want. You know, so sometimes you can stray too far from the path, Brent, as you know.
Absolutely. And one game I had greatly considered, a game that in my mind started great, actually, and then continued to get better, and they released the third one, they wrapped up the story, and then they just ended it, was Max Payne.
Yeah.
It got critically acclaimed. First game, second game, third game. Second game was definitely the slump. There's no question about that. But after the third one, that was it. They said, okay, we're done. And I still believe they will come out with another Max Payne entry at some point, maybe a prequel or something like that.
I didn't realize it only had three games. I'm surprised by that. Yep. You know, and it really was the one that came out with the whole bullet time thing.
Absolutely.
That made it really popularized that. And of course, it got ripped off by everybody. They were doing their best John Woo in those games. But those games were gritty as hell.
Absolutely.
Know? Another one that kept popping up was one of your old favorites, Brent, Fable. You know, was the first three of those now. And of course, it lumbered forward.
Yeah.
You know, it's another one that I saw in these lists. It's funny, these lists, I saw the same ones over and over. I think another one was like a Devil May Cry or something. It's stuff I'm not familiar with. It's too modern. I wanted to stick. We both, now, well, we're going to let you explain yourself here in a minute. But I did my best to stick within the spirit of the guidelines of the suggestion this week.
Oh, I definitely stuck to the spirit of the guidelines better than you did.
That you've got an angle here. And so, well, I can't wait any longer. Let's get right to it, Brent. I'm going to let you lead the dance this week because you chose something so bizarre and odd to me that I still don't understand why you picked it. So, I know you, and I know you're working some sort of angle. And so, we're going to let Brent lead the dance. Tell the people, Brent, of all the gaming world, what did you pick?
I picked a game that I had previously not heard of, but after I did a little bit of research on what it was, it did more than just fulfill today's show, but it reached back and grabbed from last week's show and said, come here, I'm going to take care of that too. I picked Nyet 3, The Revenge of the Mutant Stones.
This is a shareware game.
Well, you're correct.
Okay.
The shareware came with 18 levels, and the full version came with an astounding 108 levels. And the other thing that this did, which I always try to get a puzzle game into situations where you would never think a puzzle game would fit, but Nyet 3 was the final of the trilogy, and it is basically Tetris on steroids, but the steroids are bad steroids. They make you hurt. So, Nyet 3. Let's real quick talk about Nyet 1 and 2.
Okay.
Okay, we're done talking about Nyet 1 and 2. they were literally, they released, they got in trouble because they in the beginning, they didn't call him Net. They called him like Tetris something. Uh-huh. And the Tetris people were like, what are you doing? And they're like, okay. But this takes the Tetris formula. You know, you've got your shapes. They fall from the top and you have to make lines. And you, when you clear the lines, you know, clear four at a time or three at a time or two at a time, whatever. And then you go on to the next level.
We should mention this is DOS, by the way. DOS.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Sorry. This is a DOS game. And this is a DOS game from 1993, which I'm surprised it was that new. I really am. So you're playing Tetris, right? But instead of just hitting go and playing Tetris, you are given a scenario. And it shows you a preview of how the board is going to look. And then it might give you a little blurb. Like, for example, it might say something like, your friends are coming to join you, right? On the surface, who knows what that means, right? So you start the level and you've got to clear 10 lines or 8 lines, whatever the scenario calls for. And you're playing Tetris and little blocks will just grow from your stack. And you're like, what the crap's going on? So you're playing, but you know, that's one of the first levels. Pretty easy to pass. And then it might be like, you know, you've got an obscurer and it covers half the screen, or it might change your block into something else. Or as you're dropping blocks, a big beam might come across the middle of your screen and your block will land on it and then the beam will go away. So your block is just suspended in midair.
I hate the beam, by the way.
Or, you know, there are, or you might have blocks that you absolutely can't destroy, right? When you make a line, including those blocks or whatever, they don't go away. So you're like, what is going on? Well, this game has a store where you use virtual currency that you earn from completing levels to buy power-ups. And some of the power-ups will help you, you know, on any level. Like you could buy scanners so you know the upcoming pieces, or you know, have things that will change your block into another block. You can either choose one that's random or change a block into a straight piece. And you have all these bits and bobbles. And then you have some things that you buy with your virtual currency that are required to get past the level. It might be something like destroy the steel blocks or stop the snakes. And snakes are little parts of the level that will randomly appear and they'll start growing and they'll start, you know, just invading your board at a random point. But if you enclose them in Tetris pieces, they'll stop. So you can keep playing. You can play any of the 18 levels in any order. And then it, once you beat them all, it goes to another 18 levels. And then another and another until you go through 108 levels. The reason why ultimately I chose this game is this game is what true evil is in gaming. It starts out very innocent, like the very beginning scene. It has a little cutscene where a big fat guy in almost looks like pajamas or maybe a robe or something.
I thought it was like a lab coat or something.
Yeah, he's showing slides of who created the game.
Yes, he is.
And then he goes to a random slide where there's a topless woman on the beach. It's like one of his vacation slides. Got mixed into his presentation. He gets all red-faced. And then, so it instantly takes you off guard. You think, oh, this is going to be some nice, innocent little game. I'm ready to play. This is going to be fun. And you play the first few levels, and you understand what's going on. And you can get through it pretty easily. And then you lose. You die on a scenario. And the screen just instantly goes black. And then the whole game restarts. And what makes this particularly evil is you have to pay your virtual currency to buy save slots. So this whole game is just a slog to get through. I did not make it even past the second world. Because you're, even though you're playing Tetris, right? And Tetris is kind of a strategy game of sorts. The real strategy of this game is saving your money and buying certain items when you need them, or certain, you know, to get past a level. And if you run out of money and you didn't buy the thing you need, that's it. Game over. Start her back up. You know, it's one of those games. It doesn't cheat. It doesn't, you know, throw a random stupid mechanic at you for no reason, or it doesn't screw with your controls, unless it does. There are levels which that's what you are overcoming. But it's always fair in the sense of you are going in and doing this thing, and you know you have to do this thing. You have to complete X amount of lines. And then the whole level, the whole exploration is determining what the level is going to do to screw with you, and then wisely using your money. I love this kind of game. And when it's all based on Tetris, and some of the levels are just ingenious. They're just mind-blowing of who would have thought of this. I had a blast with this game right up to the point where I didn't have a blast on it anymore because I forgot to buy a save, and I was like 10 levels in, and yeah. I was like, oh my God, I'm done. I don't have enough time this week to keep playing this. But what did you think of this, Aaron?
Before I get into my thoughts,
all right.
How in God's name did you come up with this one? You got to tell me where this one came from. Because, listen,
all right.
I walked in the meadow of obscurity in DOS. All right. I've been there.
All right.
And I've never heard of this. And when I looked at it, I thought to myself, oh, it's just a cheap, stupid Tetris knockoff. Now, and I'll get into my feelings on it in a minute, but where in God's name did you come up with this one?
Research, baby. I knew we were going to have a short week this week before we had to do the episode live.
Uh-huh.
And I researched and researched and researched, and when I found this...
How much research could you do? We found out about it at the same time, you knucklehead.
No, man. I looked. I looked for different trilogy games, and when I found this... I didn't just find this and go, okay, that's the game I'm going to play. I found it and then learned about how it worked and the mental manipulation it goes through. And I was like, this is it. This is what a good, hard game is all about. And I had to bring it to the people here, and I had to. Well, plus, it's such a great twist on a game we all know. Everybody's played Tetris. Everyone knows what you need to accomplish in this game. Yeah. It's just a matter of actually being able to do it.
This is one of those games, I will say, that right off the bat, it's more than it appears. There's no doubt about that.
Oh yes,
because it looks like a shareware title all the way through. I will say, when you get to the actual Tetris ripoff part, it's okay. I mean, that part. I mean, congratulations, they didn't botch that. But some Tetris clones do. So I say that. I humbly submit to you that you got yourself a winner here. I hate to say it. I hate to say it. But this game, now listen, if you're a Tetris purist, steer clear.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no.
Because this game, again, we've mentioned this before, this is another game that loves hate and hates everything else hates you.
When you lose is brutal. Yeah. Oh, one real quick thing before I forget, Aaron, because I have to mention this. When you die and you lose and the game goes to black, the guy, there's this evil laugh, and then you have to sit through the intro again. Now, you can speed it up by tapping the buttons, but it doesn't just drop you back to the main menu. You have to go through that whole intro again. There's actually an item you can buy that will just end your game before you die. So instead of actually dying, it takes you back to the menu so you don't have to set through it all.
I will say,
so brilliant.
The game is not for the weak at heart.
No.
Okay. Because these Tetris puzzles are pretty diabolical. Even on the, it's on the second level, I think, pieces just start disintegrating.
Yeah.
And so if you're trying, this isn't a game where you start building Tetrises right away like you normally would. You want to get done with the level fast. Yeah. At least the first, I don't know how far you got. I think I got to level 6 before
I got farther than that. Yeah.
Before I tapped out. You have to go to the store and you have to buy stuff. And that is an interesting element to this game. I will say.
There are
when I saw
tons
that
of
store.
Items.
Yeah, what's that?
There are tons of items.
Oh, yeah.
And if you don't have the money to pay for an item, you don't even get to know what it is.
Yeah, you don't know what it is. I looked at this game, and I watched people play it to see what the heck was going on. There's some funky stuff in this game.
Yeah.
If you're a person who likes Tetris, but have gotten sort of bored, because, I mean, there are tons of Tetris variants. It's something that we like. And I remember when you played that Sega arcade Tetris.
Oh, yeah, there's a ton. Tetris, you know, is just
Tetris
a fun game.
Tetris Party and all these other games, okay? And maybe even some of this stuff, there might be a couple of these things that have been done by now. Or after all,
oh, absolutely. Well, you got to remember, this was made in 1983. Yeah,
I guarantee you there's stuff in here you ain't never seen.
Yeah.
I guarantee it. If you are a Tetris fan, this right here is your Huckleberry. Well, listen, you've got to be a fan of wackiness, too.
Yeah.
This game is the embodiment of shareware wackiness. I bet they made some bucks off this too. You know, I bet they did. But I don't know what the other nets were like.
By comparison,
did they have the same kind of money feature and stuff?
No. They were Tetris with gimmicks, but nowhere near towards the quality and polish that this game has.
This is one game where you're going to want to have some way to save the game off.
Well, if you use save states, you're cheating.
Yeah, you're going to want to cheat.
No, you can't cheat. You got to try to do it the right way.
Oh no, you can cheat, and you should.
No.
You know, but I will say this is part of the ExoDOS package. So if you're familiar with that, which is sort of a turnkey Windows package for that, it has the DOS box. It has all the stuff pre-configured. It's worked right out of the gate and no problems.
Well, this is also, they have made the English version of this game free to download. The guys that made it have completely released it into freeware at this point.
Did you see what country this is out of?
Germany.
That's
of all places, Germany. Yeah. By Proline Software.
Yeah. This is a strange one. I'm assuming you found no eBay or no magazine reviews of this.
Obviously, there was no box for this.
Yeah.
So there's no eBay listing.
You know, I looked up in the docs when the game's over. It flashes up on the screen. You can't skip this either.
Yeah.
And a very loud clicking. It gives you the information to order the game. And the game, to have this sent to your house in, what'd you say, 93?
Yeah.
This game was $35 plus $5 shipping.
Yeah.
That is...
It's big.
That's expensive, man.
It's big, yep.
To that, I would say, yet. That's too much. but
$35, especially in 93, no, it's not worth that. But free in 2021... Oh, yeah, man. If you like Tetris at all, this is something you've got to go and play.
Yeah, and the funny thing about it is, when you go to that store, the things you buy are so unnatural.
Yeah.
You know, that it's, you just stare at it like, what am I going to do with that? You know, the first thing I bought turned every block, every L-shaped block into a straight block.
Yeah.
Okay? Seems great, right? Well, I don't know if it was.
It's one use.
And no, it's not.
And since do you get multiple charges with that one?
And since I've never played a game that did that, I wasn't sure if it was helping. That's the problem, because I never thought about it. Like, boy, I wish I could turn these shapes to something else. Well, you know,
good luck. There's things that deal with the challenges at hand. There's things you could buy that just increase your score.
Yeah.
I mean, the score is nothing in this game except for pride. And you spend some money, have some score. It's that false sense of security. It really does lure you in and makes you think, you know, man, this is just a fun little game. I'm going to play a little bit of Tetris. This is going to be great. And then it just punishes you. And it's great.
Did you look to see if this was like on archive.org or anything?
It is. Yeah, it's available in lots and lots of places.
Okay, so if you want to try this on your own without downloading the outstanding ExoDOS package, I actually recommend. I was going to bury you again. Deep. I'll give you credit. You've done it again. And much to my chagrin, I had to give the devil his due. This was a good one, Brent. I had to say, I thought you did a good job.
Also, Revenge of the Mutant Stones, I got nothing. I couldn't find what that had to do with anything.
There you go. Well, That was Net 3, Revenge of the Mutant Stones. Very, very interesting, good brand. So, needless to say, I went a completely different direction with
what?
This.
You mean you didn't pick something on the lines of Net 3?
No, no. You know, a lot of people that are familiar with what I like know that I was always a big fan of Star Control, specifically Star Control 2. However, Star Control had a third game, which is going to be the game I look at today, Star Control 3, Brent. this was published by Atlum Toys and developed by a Legend Entertainment Company. All right. If you've not heard of that particular bunch, they basically came out of the text era and were sort of supposed to be the kind of the next big deal. Looking over the list of the things they did, I have played Eric the Unready, which I'm not gonna lie to you, I wasn't a big fan of that one. They did the Companions of Xanth, which I knew about, but they also did the kind of interesting and amusing Superhero League of Hoboken. You remember that one?
Nope. From
back in the day? Yeah, well, that was a game I get a kick out of. The last game they had before they got purchased by GT Interactive was Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines. But I do remember that coming out. So this game had originally been handled by Accolade, the Star Control 1 and 2. And so if you're familiar, and I'm going to go on the assumption that most people have at least heard of Star Control 2 or the Star Control series, but it basically in Star Control, it's a sweeping sort of a strategic slash arcade game that puts you in the role of someone that's affecting the outcome of this huge galactic battle, right? Star Control was made by some real popular guys. It's got a real huge following, right? And
the original.
The original. And the original was done by two fellows, Fred Ford and Paul Reich III. There's another three for you, by the way, Brent. And so when they decided to do the third game, Accolade would not give them more money, which they wanted, because they'd been killing it with Star Control 1 and 2. And Star Control 2 was a straight-up huge, huge bona fide hit.
Yeah.
And so what they did was they said, okay, we are going to hire Legend Entertainment to make this sequel. Okay, so I'm telling you this to plant the seeds here, okay? Because... and I'll get to all this in a foot, but keep this in mind. Original creators, they're out. Okay, now, I read several different places how this split occurred, all right? But one of the things I read, this was on Mobi, because some people said like it was amicable, and they even brought the guys back to help with the third one a little bit. But one of the things I found telling was the Fred Ford and Paul Reiser, they owned a lot of the alien races in the game, because in Star Control, yeah, lots of aliens appear. Accolade was like, listen, you've got to sell those to us, all right? Basically, we want you to sell the characters to us unconditionally. And so they made a deal they decided, okay, we'll go ahead and do it so we can make a little bit more money. So they sold all their aliens to Accolade, who did let them go to Legend. Now, Legend, it's funny, the reason Legend got hired was because some of the guys in upper management of Legend were real big, like hardcore fans of Star Control series. Okay. So everyone figured, well, heck, we're turning this over to a company that's reputable and that they know what they're doing. And then Legend, to their credit, brought in some of the smartest, most talented writers in the industry at the time to work on this. So that it wasn't like they brought in the ding dongs. They brought in some, you know, at the time, these are guys you wouldn't have heard of, but they brought in big time players,
yeah,
to help work on this thing, right? So, for all intents and purposes, everyone was planning on this game being a big hit, okay? Now,
they put money into this game too.
Well, they didn't put any more money than they were, they put some money, which we'll get to what they did with the money, but I want to kind of go over a general overview of what the game is, okay? Again, this is a DOS / Windows game. You're still running to Windows 95. And a couple years down the road, they released a Mac version of this game that was not met well. All right? So I don't know if the Mac version just stinks. Years had passed, so it could just be that it was just aged at that point. But the Mac version was not well received. I do know that. I've not read any good reviews on the Mac version of it. So what is Star Control 3? Well, again, it picks up directly after Star Control 2. And in Star Control 2, your character used basically this like ultra weapon to take out the Urquan Masters, these guys that were like basically subjugating big chunks of the universe.
Yeah, they flew. He flew a ship into it.
Flew a ship up, and it blew up. And if you watch the opening, they sort of recreate this in the opening of this thing. And so, when this happened in the storyline, the explosion was so violent that it blew your guy's little escape pod into a pocket time warp.
Yeah.
And while he was there, he saw the future. And the future was all the alien races banded together getting crushed by some other race. Okay. Then he popped out of this time warp, landed on this planet, was marooned effectively. It's the same planet he'd been marooned on before. And so he had to basically build himself a new ship. Okay. Now, when he escapes, he finds out that he's got the only ship in the universe that anyone knows of that can still use hyperspace, okay? He's built this thing with these artifacts called precursor artifacts, all right? I know this sounds sort of complicated, but I'm going to dumb it down real easy. So, long story short, your guy's got the only ship that can get around using hyperspace. Everyone else is effectively doomed to, like, local space travel, okay? These are races that are used to zipping all over the place. You also find out that a lot of the races that you were fighting with in the second Star Control have joined up with your alliance because they really have any choice.
Yeah.
And so at the start of this game, what's happened is your character has gone through and grabbed this is all before you start playing. He's grabbed a bunch of these different alien races, and they've went out to go to all different parts of the galaxy to try to find precursor artifacts so they can get hyperspace back up, basically. They've went out there looking for these artifacts. And once they find the artifacts, they've got to effectively figure out how to use them and then implement them, okay? And so that's pretty much the plot. Of course, since your character has seen basically his impending doom, you get the inclination that there's a mega race coming, and there is, by the way.
Right.
Now, I did not get nearly far enough into the game to actually get to really tangle with these guys. They're called the Hegemonic Crux, these bad guys. So, what do you do out there in space? Well, you're visiting all your alien alliance pals. You're also helping there who they've all set up basically factories, bases on all these different planets that they're using to make resources for you, make ships, make fuel. They're also trying to research artifacts. Okay, you actually control these various factory sections with basically sliders, and what that means is you're determining how many people are on the job. Okay,
you allocate resources.
Even by my standards, it's pretty simple, right? Because when I saw this in the preview, I'm like, we're here. What are we doing here? But it was. It's not too bad.
If you want something to get built faster, you give it more resources.
Correct. And you could also withdraw populace from the planet to take with you to do other stuff, etc., and so forth. So, another huge aspect of the game is the map screen. The map screen on. I will say this has always been a pain in the butt. These map screens, and this one's no different. The Star Control map screens are always this sort of three-dimensional deal, and the three dimensions are always a pain. I will say I found this one the least painful to navigate of all three games, you're traveling in three dimensions, and so the map is real complex. Basically, it's a 3D map. You have to kind of spin around, and of course, it don't give you how far your ship could go, how much fuel it's going to take. And so at first, you're sort of limited how far you can go based on where your fuel points are. I read an interview with the developers of this, and they decided to put in this mining and building aspect to the game to make it so you don't have to always return to Earth to get fuel, which is always a pain in the butt. So you could go out and explore more, which I did appreciate that. Something I didn't like back in the day. Now, when you go to one of these different one of these different galaxies, solar systems, you go in and you get a readout of all the planets, and some planets are populated with people that you dropped off. And so early in the game, what you're going to do is every time you come to a planet that has a star base on it, you basically a window pops up and it's a video of a guy you're talking to or girl. And these are pretty interesting because this is where you get into the dialogue of the game. Now,
and there's lots of it.
Now, if you remember the second game in particular, there were tons and tons of different alien races, tons and tons of people in the races. That sometimes they would speak. They were always interesting. And this, I assume that, in fact, this is what I read. They didn't want to go back to that same graphical interpretation of the alien races, okay? But they weren't confident enough in three-dimensional graphics to go that route. And so what they did was, so they went somewhere in the middle. Since this was a CD-ROM title, they basically used CGI and puppetry to make the aliens. Now, I remember at the time, this was a pretty big deal. In fact, if you look at the box, there's a big alien right on the front there, puppet, alien puppet. And I remember seeing the previews for this thing and thinking to myself, man, look at all, this is bizarre. You know, it really was a whole different aspect to the game. The old game had a lot of personality and humor, but this is a whole different level because this is all spoken word. There's 11 plus hours of audio in the game. And trust me, you're going to hear it because when you go to an alien, you don't have to sit there and click everything, but like, one of the things I appreciated is that you could go, like, for example, I haven't played Star Control 2 for probably a decade. It's been forever. The last time I played it's when me and Boat did the Hyper Melee on the 3DO, and that was a couple years ago. You know, when I really, and I haven't played the actual strategy part of it for years and years, way back, so I'd forgotten most of it. And you can go back, and when you talk to one of these aliens, you can have them effectively tell you their entire backstory, which is great. I love that. One of the sticking points, however, was the puppetry and the voice acting. And I'm going to ask you, Britt, just because I know you saw some of this, what were your initial responses to the puppetry, to the CGI, and to the voice acting? And I'll tell you what I thought.
Well, some of the voice acting is pretty weak. I mean, nothing I experienced was so embarrassing that I just held my face. But it's not, I mean, there's so much dialogue in this game.
Yeah.
So much. And some of it is interesting because it's talking about not only what's going on, but where you're at and who they are. And it's fun to learn about different aliens and everything. If this is a game where you just want to get into the campaign and do some hardcore action, you are screwed. That cannot happen. And when you do get into the action, some of it's very, very quick. But back to what you asked. The graphics, the puppetry of the people, it's kind of jarring, but it's also kind of refreshing. It was absolutely different for the time.
Yeah.
I think of a game like Psychonauts that sort of does that same.
They were
blend.
More like, didn't they? They use more like the Harry. They use like the one move at a time, like miniatures. Didn't they?
Stop motion.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, like I said, it was different, but
it was.
It was a refreshing feel on graphics, so I can absolutely appreciate what they were trying to do, and some of the expressions and stuff they look natural, and some are so uncanny valley that it's off-putting.
Yeah, I will say this. First of all, I think it's funny. I think this aged better than it did when it was new. All right?
I agree. I agree with that.
Two reasons. One, we weren't loading this off CD-ROM. We were loading off the hard drive, so I didn't have to wait for stuff to load. I'm sure this is a burden. Okay. Secondly, one thing I like about this is you're talking to all these crazy aliens, and they are alien. I mean, they look alien. When you see them, you're like, holy smokes, look at this freak, you know, and the dialogue, a lot of people complained, and don't get me wrong, it's not like there's 11 hours of video of these people talking, there's not. They just basically got a canned bunch of responses in terms of the way they look.
And a 15-second loop.
But
you've
also
got to
consider, this game has 24 alien races, each has their animation, 12 original races out of that 24 that weren't in the first couple games. And then you've also got to consider the 11 hours of dialogue is a ton.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a ton. And I really, a lot of people, now, have I seen 24 alien races? No. I've seen about seven so far, okay? That's how far I got this week. But I enjoyed them all, to be completely honest with you. There were none that I hated. And the voice acting, you know, the voice acting is, you've got to understand, the dialogue, in the, what they're saying is great, because the aliens sound alien. Like, you talk to Vox, they hated you in the first game, and a lot of the people in this game, you can tell they're sucking up to your guy, pretty much all of them, because you've got the only way to use hyperspace.
Yeah.
So, like, the Spathy, they're still, like, when you come in to see the Spathy, you wake him up, and he goes, oh, my God, we've been captured. He goes, I'll tell you everything about the Alliance. He goes on this long diatribe. He's gonna sell out the Alliance. And he goes, wait a minute, who's been screwing with the tint on my monitor? And he's like, oh, and he goes, oh, it's you.
Yeah.
So you can spend part of the conversation grilling this guy. He's like, oh, God, I wasn't going to turn you in. I was just joking. It was all cunning plan. I'd say those guys are the best. They're so, that guy was so funny. He reminded me of my robot, the 2XL. I have to look up who did the voice for him. But anyway,
that's something with the dialogue and stuff.
Yeah.
It does not take itself overly serious.
No.
This is very, very fun, very campy.
Yeah. This game is actually funny. Yeah. It's funny. Don't think, like, the first couple were funny too, but this one is laugh out loud funny. There were plenty of parts that I cackled with. You know, and depending on who you talk to, you know, some, like, there's one outfit that all they care about is worshiping, is basically listening to their head robot guy, Ultron. You got to do what Ultron says. Ultron, and you'll ask the guy, they'll be like, we're pretty sure this race is evil. And you'll be like, why? And he goes, oh, the Ultron said so. That's all they need. They don't have any proof, you know. And then you got one group of people who are these, like, it was like, they have they're real religious, and so everything's talking about their religion. You know, the alien races are real interesting, and I enjoyed it. I remembered a lot of them from the first couple games, and it was fun. So I'm one of the people, I'm pro puppet. I was okay with the puppets.
Oh yeah, I don't have any problem with the puppets.
I know that the puppets did not get over
time of release. Yeah,
correct. Did they? I know that from talk. I remember the Chud was that he's not happy. You know, it's no good. So. Let's talk about the actual arcadey parts of this. Now, during your adventures, you will occasionally run into aliens that are hostile to you, okay? And so that's when you break into the hyper melee portion of the game. Now, all the ships you're building, you're going to have access to in this eventually, the more you build. And whatever race is coming at you, like there's a new race of characters, I think they're called the back attacks, something like that. There's these robot guys. You can't understand what they're saying. And they show up real early. And you fight them a lot. Now, if you've ever played Star Control 2, the combat is just sort of a 2D... It's basically like a 2D flat combat screen with two ships. And then you shoot each other with whatever weapons those ships have. And then there's some asteroids and some plasma, and that's it. The screen wraps around. And this is basically the same with a butt. And the butt is they've introduced this, like, weird depth to it, haven't they, Brent? That they've given the ship some sort of weird depth. The depth where it's coming into play.
Pseudo-3D.
Right. I'm not the biggest fan. I read somewhere right before we got one on that you could turn this off. If you can, I didn't know about that.
I didn't see that.
But it's not a game breaker, you know. This combat is fun. Most time when I play this game, it's hyper melee. And this one of the things this offered, Star Control 3, would let you play hyper melee over the LAN, for example. So you could actually network and play it if you wanted to. We used to just play it hot. You know, we used to play two people at once on the computer. The melee was always something that we enjoyed. But I will say the menus in this to select your ships, they stink. They did a crap job on those. I hated those because you can't see all the ships at once. You got to kind of scroll down through these little portraits, and it's no good. So they dropped the ball on that. Plus, all the ships that you're used to that were here before, any of the ships that were part of races that got booted, you don't get to use those no more. Yeah. Those ships aren't even in
they're
here.
They're gone.
That's like 12 ships gone.
Yeah.
You know, so that blows. Let's talk. Got a couple more points I want to bring up. Let's talk about the music in this. The music in Star Control 1 was pretty good. The music in Star Control 2 was real good. The music in this game is not real good, okay? Yeah. They went to that old, you know, people wax about this music, and I cannot figure it out. It's that old MIDI crap, right? Straight up Casio crapola, all right? Don't like it, never did. They put that in this game on purpose instead of using the mod file system they used before. And they did that so they would have easier times porting this to consoles. That was the word on the street. That's what they reported. Well, guess what? Didn't get ported to consoles. This game.
Sorry to ask what console this came out
on. Well, they planned on porting this to the Saturn and the PlayStation, and it never happened. And so, effectively, you got the MIDI, but you didn't get the actual, that's all you got. You know, so that sucked. You know, no good. No good. I've been interested to see this. I mean, you could have easily ported this to a console because they've changed from the previous Star Control. So it's all mouse driven. And so you could have done it, but I don't think I'd want to play this on a console. I mean, you could though, but I mean, because of being, you know, use a controller, but it's not, I could see why it didn't make the cut. It's funny though, because they decided not to port this to consoles during production of the game. Well, why not put good music in, you know?
So they could port it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not going to get too deeply into the plot of this. The plot is interesting. I read over the plot. I watched about half the game. I probably played this game a total of 6 hours this week, believe it or not. Just because, I mean, I played a couple sessions to it. Because, you know, this is the kind of game I had to refamiliarize myself. I'll also mention that this game includes this, you have an onboard computer. The onboard computer is great because effectively it will tell you where to go next. It'll say like, oh, we have received word that there's a Urquan colony on like Scumbag 4. And then you're like, whoop, set course for Scumbag 4. This game is one of these games that's like, has keyword driven game. And so you can actually screw up stuff quite easily in this game. Now, it didn't happen to me, but I read about a ton of people having that problem where they would do something the game didn't want them to do at that particular time. And when they went back to another alien, that keyword was screwed up and then the game was boned. So that can happen. You know, that was a sign of the times. That's where thing happened. Because what you'll do in this game is you can activate, since you're doing all that dialogue, and when you go talk, for example, there's one section of the game where an alien race says, listen, the Vox are like raiding us, you know, and you go talk to the Vox like, what? No, 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 not us. Well, that stuff wasn't there before you talked to the race that said they were raiding them. You get my point here.
Yeah.
Something else I thought was interesting. I was reading some reviews on this, and this guy's talking about how long things took to happen. And I'm assuming the guy didn't know about this, but in the lower right-hand corner, there's a clock that's rolling. There's a slider on it, and you can determine how much time passes on it. So yeah. He was talking about going out and walking his dog and stuff. I'm like, what are you doing? Clearly, he did not read the docs. By the way, the docs are scanty on this.
The time speed up is absolutely necessary. Yeah. Because sometimes you're just waiting for stuff, to fuel to get mined, or you know, your engineers to get finished. And then you're just like, crank it up to a million. Okay, everything's done.
Yeah. So, with all that said, one would wonder when this was released how it did. Well, it did pretty well. It was considered a commercial success. It debuted at number 11 on the charts in 96. It went up to 10th. In its initial 2 months, Wiki here says it sold 100,000 units. Pretty good. The critic scores back in the day were quite solid. Looking over them, I've got a list of them here. For example, PC Player gave it a 91. Gameplay gave it 83. Power Play 81. PC Action 80. CGW, that's the old computer gaming world, 80. So these scores are pretty good. Now the Mac, I will say Macworld gave the Mac versus a 40. So they killed it. And I heard apparently the Mac version is quite bad.
Yeah, so, I've heard it actually has issues. It's not the game. It just has issues.
Yeah. So I guess what I'm saying is this game came out. It sold well, right? It performed well, and it in terms of its rating. So why is it sort of frowned upon now? And I'm telling you straight up, this game is frowned upon because the Star Control 2 people are hardcore, and they do not like this game. And the main reasons are they don't like the puppets, they don't like the music, they don't like the fact that the two creators are gone. That's the big thing. Yeah. They don't like some of the directions that they took the plot lines and stuff. I can understand that, but again, I'm a guy who loves Star Control 2, but I actually really enjoyed my time with this. I thought the menus were so much easier to get through. I like the puppets. I like the storyline. I like the fighting. I liked it, man. Overall, I had a good time with it. People might also ask, well, why wasn't there a Star Control 4? Well, there was a thing called StarCon that was started on, and it was more of a, it had more of a first person or a third person ship view, sort of like a Star Fox or something, but it never got out of production. And then ultimately, as far as I can tell, the two guys that started Star Control had a big legal battle that just ended like recently. So they got into a huge legal battle over who owned what. They were both trying to make their own games. And so apparently there was a game made, Star Control Origins, that eventually was pulled off the shelf and taken out of circulation because of this lawsuit. So apparently there's going to be some sort of new resurgence of Star Control material from two different people. I guess that's what they agreed to, was to both sort of do their own thing, which is good, you know, because there are still a ton of fans out there that like them some Star Control, myself included. I looked this up on the eBay, Brent, and you can get one of these. I was surprised. I saw sealed copies of this thing going for under $30, and you can get copies of this all day long for $20. So not too bad. Any final thoughts on this one?
Star Control 2, which is my favorite of the series.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't play enough of Star Control 3 to either love it or hate it. Uh-huh. I mean, there's a lot there to unpack in the short amount of time that we had.
Yeah.
But Star Control 2 sparked a special interest in my life when we were out and we were playing that. So much so that it was the game that really got me into thinking about what I would do if I was going to build a game. What would I change? And I know they're lost to time, but I had notebooks full of arcade cabinets where it was Star Control and the different control schemes and how you would shoot and how it would play. And I drew up cabinets for 2-player, 4-player, 8-player, and had, you know, all these setups. And I had ships, alien ships, and their backgrounds and how they looked and all this stuff. And all of it was spurred by Star Control 2. So Star Control 2 really holds a special place in my heart. And, because of that, it will always be my favorite in the series. I don't think Star Control 3, outside of getting rid of the original people, I got a big problem with that, right?
But original. Yeah.
That wasn't the game's fault, right? That's politics and all that crap.
Well, no, they owned all the characters. They're even mentioned in here.
I know. But the game itself is not offensive to the material. It took some liberties and choices with the puppets and the excessive amount of voice options and stuff like that. But it didn't do anything, in my opinion, to harm the brand. Getting rid of a bunch of races made the big brawls suck. Right, because it get rid of some of your favorite people,
right,
and it kept
exactly
some of the crappiest ones, but it was not offensive. It didn't make me angry at the game. So, if you are a fan, if you want to really sit down and play for months, I don't think this is a game you pick up for a few hours and get fulfilled, which is unfortunately what we were up for this week. But if you want to really sit down and go through this space opera, there's enough in-game backstory in Star Control 3. I think you could probably start here and feel yourself around. I would say go for it. I think this is certainly something worth playing.
I think this is also a good one if you just haven't ever played the other two and just wanted to try one. It's a good one. I will say I thought about this, Brent, and it's funny. A lot of the melee action on this reminds me a lot of the same basic principles of Archon. You know, in fact, the game doesn't entirely. You've got the different items with the different powers. You fight them together. And of course, Archon Ultra had that strategic element to it. I mean, not on this level, but it's still. I can see why both the games are appeal to me. there's something appealing about that system. But I think this is absolutely one that's worth checking out. This is very slow paced, though.
Understand that going in.
It is. But I mean, if you're a fan of Babylon 5, for example, this is the game for you. If you like politics and wacky aliens and all that stuff, this is a game I think
that's lighthearted. It does not take itself serious.
It's
most
genuinely
of the time.
Funny too. You know what else is genuinely funny, Brent?
Is it me?
Well, your face, but also the wheel. Let's get it going here. All right, man. So, Brent, you know, you really came through with these new pieces, man.
Thanks, man. I tried.
Listen,
they are scheduled for a Sunday delivery.
We have these printed at the North Pole. So, we've still got pieces in here that we have never rolled on the wheel, and so we've got them here. Single word title is the one we placed on here.
Who submitted that, Aaron? Do you have an idea?
Oh boy, let's see. It's actually written on here. Let me see here. Caught me off guard. This was you. I should have known you'd have me look up you. My God. All right, and the retro rewind piece is the Vectrex, everybody. Are you ready, Brent?
Yeah, spin me up, Aaron.
Here we go. Let's see what we get here. And the winner is...
Whoa, that's Brent. Aaron.
It is. It is exactly what you think. It's the Bally Astrocade. Now, that
there,
piece...
If you hear real hard, if you listen real close, the person who won the Dragon Slayer Mini just squealed in delight. I hear him right now.
He's the Bally Astrocade commander and master.
The nice thing is all our research is done for us.
The funny thing is...
We'll just pull that email up and read it.
The reason that piece is on here is because he suggested it, and that's how he won, ultimately. That's how he won the Dragon Slayer.
Well,
because of that suggestion, wasn't
it? Close. No, he suggested that piece way back. That's probably the oldest piece still left on the wheel. And it got put on the wheel, and he got so excited that he wrote us an incredible... detailed and informative email saying, listen, you got to know about this and know about that, and this is how you do the stuff and the things. So our research is done.
It's amazing that we have never covered the Bally Astrocade. That stuns me.
That bit of kindness, because, you know, it was one of those things where if you had emailed us within the last so many days, you automatically entered. He nailed it.
There you go. In fact, Buck Owens, our good friend in the chat, just put up the website, ballyalley.com, for all your Bally Astrocade needs. We'll be going to that site, Brent.
Absolutely.
So, real quick, before we take it to the house, I want to once again, bam, talk about Amigathon, Brent. It'll be sooner than later, man. It's coming. In fact, it's coming sooner than you think. It's going to be here in July. In fact, the actual date here is, I never can find it on this stupid post. Here it is, July 24th, 2021, Brent.
I can see where you'd miss that big text right in the middle.
Take
it
off.
It is tough.
It's going to be a happening. Luminaries from around the internet, shows far bigger and more important than we are, Brent, are going to be coming down and throwing their weight around from a charitable perspective. I just saw a thing today that our good buddy Ravi Abbott, the DJ extraordinaire, was laying down a personal Amigathon track. He was putting down a set just to show during Amigathon. He had a picture of it on his Facebook, so it should be great. And if you are the charitable sort, or just like one wacky 12-hour extravaganza, actually well over 12 hours, then please join us for Amigathon 2021. There are the particulars, and we are raising funds for the Children's Miracle Network, Brent. It's a good cause. If you want to go ahead, and in fact, you can even go up and donate right now. You don't have to wait. Why wait till the 11th hour, as Mean Gene Okerlund used to say?
You know what? Do it. Tell them ARG sent you, and give a big thumbs up.
Yeah. This is, if you want to donate right now, it's amigathon.com. That's AmigaThon.com. The first $500 that are going to be, that get placed up there, and I think we still got a couple $100 to go. Retro Rewind, our good buddy Frank, is going to match the first $500. And so that's a heck of a bargain right there, if you ask me, Brent. So that's worth checking out.
I will shoot him last next time we play online together.
There you go. Well, that didn't stop him from blowing me away over and over. I think that's it. Thanks for everyone for joining us here on a weird night with the Brent being out of town. But then we'll be back to our normal Sunday slot. And that will be, let me see here. That'll be the 30th of May. 30th of May, we'll be back on at our usual 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Brent, let's take this thing to the house. Any final thoughts before we go?
I think today, this is unfortunate. These games fell on a short week because I think we could have spent another full week on both these things and still had more to talk about.
Well, I had a good time, and I'm going to keep playing both these. So there you go. So until next time, nyet to you.
Hey, everybody!
Thanks for joining us today. We really hope you enjoyed the show. Hello to our YouTube subscribers and our Twitch followers. A special thank you to Duncan Styles for our vector graphics and Bartbit for an amazing closing theme. Want to help keep ARG spinning for as little as a dollar a month? You can do so at our new Patreon at patreon.com/ARGpresents. Just like these fine folks. Ram, W. Vetke, Rolo, Olaf Hope, Anthony Jarvis, Terry Howard, Gary Heather, John Schaller, The Slow Morris, Frodo NL, Steve Rathmussen, Bernhard Lucas, Chris Fold, Mitsuyama, Jason Warnes, Rob Black O'Hara, Andy Craig, Dave Velociraptor, Retro Algae, Hermsky, John Dykeman, Jerry Dennington, Z9K9, and Mr. B. Don't want to explain another credit card bill? That's okay too. You can help us out by leaving us a positive review on Spotify or Apple iTunes. Have an idea for a wheel piece? Email it to us at argpresents@mail.com. We film live every Sunday, 10 a.m. EDT on Twitch. Hope to see you there.